for the Paranormal View. The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Henry Foister, Craig Rupp, and Jeffrey Gould.
The Paranormal View.
Welcome, everybody, to the Paranormal View right here on the Para-X Radio Network. Want to thank everybody for being with us tonight. And for those listening from around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you. And if you're not here with us in the chat room, you can come over to para-x.com, click on the show chat button on the right side of the page, and then click on the player button at the top of the page, and you'll be right here with all these wonderful people, and you'll be able to interact with us and the guest by sending questions to us to ask of the guest. Tonight, Jeffrey is not here yet. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to make it. He moved today, so he still may not have everything set up yet. Craig was doing an investigation today, so he doesn't look like he's back from that yet, but he said he will be back, so he'll probably be coming into the show in just a little bit. So until then, we have a wonderful guest, and we'll be bringing her on here in just a second. I do want to remind everybody that next week we will have the Ghost Soldiers with us. So you'll have to come tune in for that. Now, tonight we have Elaine Kuzmeskis, and she is a spiritualist medium and a professional astrologer. She is the director of the New England School of Metaphysics and is the author of Soul Cycles, Connecticut Ghosts, and Seance 101. And I want to welcome Elaine to the Paranormal View. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How are you, Henry?
We are doing good here. So I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight.
Well, you're talking about one of my favorite subjects, mediumship. I've been a professional medium for about 40 years. So I started when I was in college, believe it or not, reading about parapsychology. And the next thing you know, I went to mediumship school right away, and I've never regretted it.
Well, now, you said, I was talking with you before the show, that you were born with the gift.
Yes, I was. I used to see spirits when I was in my crib. That would be about 2 years old. And I would wake up in the morning and I would see my Hindu guy, who was a bare-chested Hindu with a white Muslim a turban. And he had the most kind eyes, magnetic eyes. Like, they were just beautiful. And he would telepathically tell me things that were going to happen during the day. And I always felt very protected. I also, as I got a little bit older, began to have experiences of a psychic nature that a child might relate to. Like I would just, my mother would give me my lunchbox and I'd just hold it and I know exactly what was in it. You know, it's called psychometry. But I really thought, Henry, everyone was psychic, so I was quite surprised that they weren't. And it wasn't until I read about Edgar Casey, the Sleeping Prophet. Have you ever heard of Edgar Casey?
Yes.
Yes, everyone's heard of him now. But, you know, back in when I started reading about him, which would have been back in the late 1960s, early 1970s, not that many people had heard about Edgar Casey. But Edgar Casey was the first person that I read about who also saw auras, talked to spirits, and had psychic experiences. Plus, what was very important, he was a strong Christian, and I've always had a religious bent. So I felt if Edgar Casey had these gifts, and he was a good Christian, I could have these gifts too and do the right thing. So I really enjoyed the Casey material, and I studied it, I worked with it. And one of the things that Edgar Casey said was that people who wanted to develop their psychic gifts should meditate. And he said you should meditate at the same time and place every day. So when I was going to college, I went to University of Massachusetts at Boston, and I lived with two roommates in Brooklyn. approximately at 2 o'clock every afternoon, I would stretch out on the carpet in my room, and I would meditate for 20 minutes to a half hour. And it wasn't long that I began to have out-of-body experiences, astral travel. And in one of my astral travel experiences, I left my body, and I entered another realm where I saw a sea of faces. Well, from reading the Edgar Cayce material, he said that was the astral plane, the first place people went. And he said if you wanted to be more spiritual, to go higher. So I forced myself to go higher, and I was in another plane, which was very clear, and I saw a gentleman there that had lost both his legs. He was in a wheelchair, and he looked at me, and he said, I'm your relative, and he seemed to know all about me. And next to him was a very slender lady with a purple flower, and she just said, that's my name. And the vision was extremely clear. And what I did is I would record all my meditation experiences. I think that's important. It put the date and the time and what you experienced. So when I saw my mother, I asked her, Mama, did we ever have any relatives that lost their legs? And she thought, and she said, well, yes, your Grandpa Brickett has a father, and his father, his last years of his life, he had severe diabetes and he lost both his legs. But she said he was okay because he had a housekeeper named Violet, and that was the woman with the purple flower. So after that, I knew I was a medium. I knew I was really seeing the spirits, and I was accurately entering the spirit realm. And I also did a lot of reading of Paramahansa Yogananda. You ever heard of Yogananda, Henry?
No, I've heard of yoga.
I know. Well, Yogananda was a very famous yogi that came in 1920 from India to teach meditation to Westerners. And he started the Self-Realization Foundation in California, which is still in existence. And his most famous book, which is still in print, by the way, is Autobiography of a Yogi. And in Autobiography of a Yogi, he gave a lot of information on helping people to develop spirituality through meditation. And so I learned a lot about meditation from reading that particular book. And I also learned something very important, and that is that we all have spirit guides. And one of Yogananda's guides was named Babaji. He's a great master. And in the story, Yogananda tells how important faith is. In 1920, he was invited to the World Council of Religions in Boston, and he didn't have any money to go, but he wanted to go. He was a young man. So he prayed and meditated, and Babaji appeared before him, materialized before him, and told him to ask his father for the money. And lo and behold, he asked his father, who was known to be a little bit tight with money, and his father says, I will give you the money to go to Boston, but it's not for you, it's for your master. And he did, and that's how Yogananda arrived in the United States. And I think those two books that I read, The Sleeping Prophet by Jess Stern and Autobiography of a Yogi by Yogananda, had tremendous influence on me. And I really feel they pointed me in a very good direction in terms of developing a mediumship for the purpose of helping humanity. I think that's very important. And I had some other adventures, too. One of the things people always ask me is, how did you come to be a medium? Well, after reading these two books, I really wanted to develop mediumship so I could help other people. But, you know, there weren't that many people, especially in those days, who were mediums, or at least who were publicly mediums. And so it wasn't until I went to Etna, Maine, which is a little town outside of Bangor, and I was having a cup of coffee, and I saw in a newspaper, the bottom of a newspaper, that the first spiritualist church of Etna, Maine, was opening that afternoon at 2 p.m. So I said to my friend, I just have to go. So we drove over, and the very first person I met was a woman. She was like in her 60s, kind of a grandmotherly type. I was 20, in my early 20s at the time. So I said, well, you know, I'm very interested in mediumship. Could you recommend someone who could do a reading? And she said, yes. If you want an honest reading, you go see Reverend Bill Ellis. So I thought for a moment. I said, okay, thank you. And she told me where Bill Ellis was. And then I thought again, and I said, well, how do you know he's a good medium? And she just laughed. She said, he's my husband. So that was my introduction to mediumship. And Reverend Bill was quite a character. He was a medium that could read your aura. For example, he told me my aura was yellow, was golden yellow, and had green and blue. And, you know, those are some of my favorite colors in my wardrobe. And he told me that, described my grandmother to me, who had died 10 years before, exactly what she looked like. And he also told me that I was probably going to be a teacher. And at that time, I was studying to be an English teacher. So I thought he was pretty accurate. In fact, he was so accurate, I went back 2 weeks later just to have another reading. I was astounded at how a perfect stranger could know me so well. And second time, I took some literature, and it said in one of the pamphlets that there was a developmental circle in Brookline. And at the time, I was living in Brookline, Massachusetts. And the developmental circle, which was led by my teachers, spiritualist mediums, Reverend Gladys Customs and Reverend Kenneth Customs, was about 2 miles from my house. So I went, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being with like-minded people. And in the spiritualist tradition, people develop as a group. Because, you know, when you have a circle of energy, Henry, that you can feel more energy. It tends to be very good for bringing the psychic energy up. Have you found that to be true?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's why people, we do the circle, we hold hands, we say a prayer. And Gladys Customs was a trance medium. She was a full trance medium like Edgar Cayce. She went into trance, and she did the classes in trance, too. When we had our development circle, her guy, who was a Hindu, by the way, by the name, she dubbed him the professor, would come through, and he would help us to open our third eye and to see things clairvoyantly. And the group, which had about 30 or 40 people, had a wonderful camaraderie. It was almost as if we had known each other before. And I became very close friends with the Customs. In fact, I lived down the Cape with them for a few months at one time. And Gladys told me once that her guide said one time that she would have a group which would be composed of people she had known in ancient Egypt. And I really feel that was the group I was in, because it was just such wonderful energy and such a good feeling of goodwill among the people. Even though we were very different people, we were all doing different things from very different walks of life, there seemed to be a common thread, which I enjoyed. And, you know, the spiritualist tradition is that we develop mediumship to prove the continuity of life, that there is no death and there are no dead. I think that's very exciting. I do. I think that if science, and I think science is getting closer to that, could prove that we exist past the change called death, it certainly would make a lot of people more peaceful at their ending years, very definitely. And spiritualists tend to take death in a philosophical manner. We certainly miss our loved ones, but we do feel that they are going to a better place where there is no pain, where they can be at peace. And we send loving thoughts to them from this side of life. And very often because of that, I have always feel that people who have a good spiritual belief, whether it's spiritualism or Catholicism or whatever, they seem to be able to make the transition called death with more peace and more ease.
That's true. I feel that when you do pass on, you just change into a spirit and go over into the spirit realm.
Right. But, you know, we don't want to go before we finish our work, because then we have to come right back. The trick is to get it done.
Now, one of the things that I had down is you are a spiritualist medium.
Mm-hmm,
now,
that's correct.
For those that may not know, what is the difference between a psychic and a medium?
That's a great question. A medium is always psychic, but a psychic is not always a medium. That's because a medium has to use psychic gifts of clairvoyance, which is seeing spirit, and clairaudience, which is hearing spirit, and clairsentience, which is feeling spirit, to tune into the other side. A psychic also uses those gifts, but they don't have a spirit guide usually. They usually tune into the universal energy. Some very famous mediums that might help your listeners to see the difference would be people like Sylvia Brown, who has a guide, Francine, and James Von Praagh, who also has a guide. Edgar Casey had the guide, The Source. And then there are people that just work on psychic energy alone, and they just tune in.
Well, now, I know you was saying a little bit ago, or to start with, that you found out that not everybody is psychic.
I was surprised, because being born with the gift, you assume other people also pick up the energy. But no, not everyone is. I think that, it's to me, the psychic is a gift, like artistic ability. Some people, they just have a natural knack for putting colors together and drawing. And other people, no interest whatsoever. So it's a gift like any other talent we might possess. The only thing, our society doesn't really understand the psychic very well. We're really, it's not like some of the other societies, like if you go to Peru or Brazil, there's a lot better understanding of the other side. Even the American Indians had great appreciation for the great white brother, very much so. Whereas our society tends to deny death or deny a lot of these psychic experiences.
Now, when one who is developing their psychic abilities, can you read people? How do you read people? I mean, like if you do a reading for someone, do you pick up on their aura, or I mean, do you have to be with them? Can you do it over the phone? Or
well, I do it many different ways. 90% of my reading is in my office in Suffield, Connecticut. And when people come, I usually ask for an article, such as a watch or a ring, and I start with psychometry, because everything that you own or you have about your person has your energy on it. So I hold it and I tune into them, and I begin to read their energy field. And I'm also clairvoyant, so I read their aura, which is the energy that surrounds the body. And the different colors in the aura tell you things about the person. And I can talk about that a little bit later. And then I usually go into a light trance, and I bring through messages from their spirit loved ones. For example, I might, for example, say I have somebody here by the name of George or Georgie, and then the person will say, oh, yes, that was my father or whatever, and we go get through a list of people that have come from the spirit world to communicate with them. That's the first half of the reading. The second half of the reading, I usually let them ask questions, because people usually come with certain things that they want to find out or that they want to know more about. And I also, I do readings on the phone. When I read on the phone, I usually do half psychic and I do half astrology. So I usually take a person's birth time and date instead of holding an object. And if they send a picture, I'll read the photograph for them, and I'll pick up the spirits that way. But I enjoy mediumship, and I always feel that before I do a session, that the spirits are in the office, and they usually tell me things about the client before they come to kind of get me ready. And then when I sit down and I'm very quiet, that's when I can get the deepest spiritual information. And really, I feel when people write their questions down, that's when their spirit guides and loved ones begin to gather the information. Because really, I'm just a telephone operator to the other side. I'm taking messages from the spirit world.
Well, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
You're almost like an operator.
That's it. That's me.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about your books, and we'll go into each one talking about different things in them. Your book with the Connecticut ghosts, do you do investigations also?
Yes, I did. I went to 31 locations throughout Connecticut to do investigations.
So all the places in your book you actually went to?
Yes, I did. There's one exception, and that was the Connecticut Lighthouse, where there is the ghost Ernie off of the coast of New London.
Right.
And Actually, my editor, Dr. Susan Roberts, did that investigation. But the others, all the others, I was there, yeah? And what I would do is I would call, say, a place like Hillstead Museum, and I would ask them if I could come on the day the museum was closed and do an investigation for my book. And when I called the Hillstead Museum, which is the home of Theodate Pope, a very famous woman in Hartford, they weren't there, so I left a telephone message. And the next day, I was on my porch having a glass of iced tea. It was in August. And this very genteel spirit came up behind me. She's about, I'm about 5'3". She must have been about 5'1". And she said, in the loveliest voice, your wish shall be granted. And about 30 seconds later, the Hillstead Museum called and said I could was welcome to come the following Monday. And the spirit was Theodate Pope. So she was very much involved in the big investigation of her home in Farmington, Connecticut. And I love going there because there was something about that home that just seemed really cozy, familiar, a place that a psychic would feel at home. And I found out later she did seances in the living room there. She was very much a believer. Theodate Pope was a very wealthy woman, and she funded the research of William James at Harvard University on parapsychology, and she even wanted to start a parapsychology foundation in the Hartford area. And I found this all out doing my research. Unfortunately, when she decided to start the parapsychology foundation, she went to London to study at the British Society for Psychical Research, and the ship she chose to go over on was the Lusitania.
Oh, that wasn't good.
And then she was on the Lusitania when it was torpedoed by Germans. So instead of ending up in London, she ended up floating around in the cold Atlantic Ocean. And the only thing that saved her was, in those days, the women had these huge skirts. And one of the oars actually had shimmied up her skirt, and it acted like a buoy, so she stayed afloat even though she was semi-conscious. And Theodate Pope was the very last survivor to be picked up by rescuers.
Wow.
I always like to feel that her guide said to those rescuers, don't you stop until you find her, and they found her.
No, that's
but
great.
After that, she was not in any kind of physical shape or psychological shape to start a parapsychology foundation. But she never lost her interest in the psychic. She's an amazing woman. She was the first woman architect. She started the Avon O. Farms Boys School in Avon, Connecticut. She adopted three boys, even though she was not married. She didn't get married till she was 49. And she was kind of a woman that had her own mind. And she also had psychic experiences during her life. So she was a wonderful place to visit, the Hillstead Museum. And it's a beautiful home. It's a huge home that she designed for her parents. And for art lovers, it is filled with Manets and Turner and all kinds of beautiful artwork that's the original. It just was a great experience. One of the things I always do is I pay attention to my dreams. Do you ever write your dreams down, Henry?
No, I really don't.
It's a great way. I always say to people, dreams are the lazy man or lazy woman's way to the psychic. Because everyone is psychic in dreams. They really are. And the night before I visited the Hillstead Museum, I had a very strong dream. My husband and I were on one side of the street, and the psychic researcher and Professor William James was on the other. And he was talking to me. And my husband was with us. And the next day, the two of us went to the Hillstead Museum to investigate. And I really couldn't figure the dream out. I brought my EMF meter to pick up the electromagnetic energy. And we went throughout the whole house. And we came into Theodate Pope's office. And the meter had been going 2 or 3. The highest would be a 10. So we really were getting a lot of psychic energy per se. But when we went to the office, all of a sudden it went to like 9. So I knew there was a spirit in that office. And when you use an EMF meter, it's like playing hot and cold. Have you done that?
Oh, right, yeah.
oh, you got to keep going, continue to go. Then it might go down, then you might go to another spot. So I finally got the highest rating at 10 next to a picture on her desk. So, of course, I asked the curator, I said, who's that a picture? Whose picture is that? And she said, well, that is Henry James, the author. And I said, Henry James? I said, was he related to William James? She said, yes, they were brothers. So then I started asking more questions. I said, well, was William James ever a guest at this home? And she goes, oh, yes, he was many times. And then I did more research, and I realized they were very good friends, and she had often funded his psychic research. So I do feel William James was in the room with me when I did that research. And it made me feel, it gave me like a really good feeling that a spirit on the other side that was so prominent in psychic research would come in and help me. So I really felt that doing the book was a blessing because I had many wonderful experiences such as that. Another interesting one, we went to the old Newgate Prison in East Granby, Connecticut.
Right.
When we was in June, it was like the middle of June, and it was the very first place I chose to investigate because it's about 6 miles from my house. So we thought we'd start there. And wouldn't you know, two huge busloads of school children pulled up in front of us. So there was nothing we could do. We just had to wait for about an hour until the children went through the copper mines. So I took out my yellow pad. And I said, I'm going to meditate, and I'm going to see what impressions I get. Because I think mediumship is very helpful in psychic investigations. So I'm sitting there, and the first thing I felt is I heard this wonderful music, kind of like ragtime music, happy music. So I wrote down happy music, 1920s, and a few other impressions. And then I tuned in again, and I saw all these little children and these small animals on the property. So I wrote down spirit children, small animals. And finally, we were able to go through. And the first thing I said to the tour guide is, I said, has this place ever been used for anything other than a copper mine? And he said, yes. It was. He said it was sold in the 1920s, and where you were sitting was the entrance to a speakeasy. So that was the happy music I was picking up. And he said later in the 40s, it was a petting zoo for children. So, you know, there are different layers. It's almost like a psychic archaeological investigation because you can pick up the different layers that exist in a location. Is that something?
Oh, yeah. That's
yeah.
It's neat like that.
Yeah, a man by the name of Sabat, Mr. Sabat, does psychic archaeology. He goes to places like Gettysburg, and he goes through the layers of energy that have been present there. So that's a good technique. Anyway, when we got into the copper mines, which, by the way, had been used for prisoners. Prisoners did hard labor in the copper mines in colonial times. We did get a picture of a spirit, which is in Connecticut Ghost. And that spirit, you could say, well, it's an anomaly. It's a raindrop. You know, you hear it all. It was an orb. But that orb followed my husband all around the copper mine. So it had an intelligence to it. It wasn't just a static experience.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think it might have been something to do with the prisoners because it wasn't a happy orb. You know what I mean? It wasn't a happy, heavy feeling. But that was the first place I investigated. And then we went over to the Mark Twain House.
Let me jump in here just for a second. We now have somebody else with us. Mr. Craig, are you there?
I am here. Hey, everybody.
All right.
Hello, how are you?
So this is Craig Rupp.
Hi, Elaine. How are you? Welcome.
Good. Nice to meet you, Craig.
Nice to meet you.
And I'm sure you also have a ton of questions, too.
If you haven't already asked them.
I've only asked just a few. I've been just letting her talk all about how she become a medium and got into doing investigations. So she's only talked about a couple places. So while I'm thinking about it, if you do have questions, you can private chat Craig or private chat me, and we'll get those questions right over to Elaine. So do come on over if you're not here in the chat room. come on over to para-x.com. Click on the show chat button on the right side of the page and click on the player button at the top of the page. And you'll be in with all these wonderful people and be able to ask questions with us. So that was another question I had, and I know you partially answered it. And that was when you're doing investigating, do you use any equipment or just your psychic abilities?
I do use equipment. I use an electronic, an EMF meter, electromagnetic field meter. I find them very helpful. I do. I also use a camera. I prefer a digital camera. I will often use, of course, my psychic ability, too. But, you know, when you're doing an investigation, it's wonderful to give impressions and to check them out. But really, one of the most important things is hard evidence. And I've done a lot of work with psychic photography because I think a picture is worth a thousand words. I really do. And I started out with Connecticut Ghosts doing a lot of orb pictures. And the orbs were very interesting. And you don't have to be psychic to get orb pictures. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can pick
those
up anywhere.
Everybody, you go on the internet, there are everyone gets orb pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Right away, that was one of my questions, psychic photography.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I love psychic photography. And one of the things I did is I began taking more pictures spontaneously. And I would find that in some pictures, you will get not just orbs, but you will get shapes of spirits. And I've also had some rare pictures, three or four, where I actually get faces of spirits, where you can really clearly make out the features. And one of the most beautiful pictures that I took that I just love, I was at the Danbury Music Hall, and I just happened to snap a photo of a portrait of Marian Anderson. And there were five or six faces that showed up. And Marian Anderson was the singer who was very instrumental in bringing to people's attention some of the unfair practices of the DAR, the Daughters of the American Revolution, who I actually liked the group, but in their day they were very prejudiced against minorities. And they wouldn't let her sing. And what happened was she actually got to sing at the Washington Monument. And she was a wonderful symbol of fair play and freedom. And the face that I got in her picture was Abraham Lincoln. And he certainly believed in being a fair-minded person. So I was very touched by that. I also sometimes get shapes of spirit. I've gotten shapes of, like, my spirit guide have come through in some of the photos. And in my new book, which will be coming out this spring, by Schiffer. It's called The Art of Mediumship. I have a whole chapter on electronic mediumship, which is EVP and psychic photography. And I tell people some of my experiences and how I developed it. So that is a big interest of mine.
Now, when you do this photography, do you actually see the spirits as a medium and then just point the camera and...
You can do it that way, but I have found that I get the pictures that I least expect them. It's like a gift. It's a spontaneous experience. I'll be at a place such as Cedar Hill Cemetery outside of Hartford. And I'll just, you know, I'll be taking pictures of some of my favorite monuments. There's a wonderful monument that's built in the shape of a pyramid. And the person that built it must have been very spiritual, the person that's buried there. Because I've got many, many faces. I don't see them. They come out when I develop the picture.
Wow.
I also, J.P. Morgan is buried there. And J.P. Morgan was the financier. But he was also interested in the cult. He made a lot of money because he had a very famous astrologer. Do you guys know the name of his personal astrologer?
No.
No.
I'll give you the name of you. It's Aunt Evangeline Adams. She was a Boston woman who was a great astrologer. She wrote several books, was very successful, and she did financial astrology for J.P. Morgan. And he has a beautiful monument that is quite astounding. It is built in the shape of the Ark of the Covenant. And I've taken many pictures there and got many orbs, a lot of psychic activity. Of course, Katharine Hepburn and her family are also buried in Cedar Hill Cemetery. And I have felt the spirit of Miss Hepburn, but I haven't really got any orbs. I don't think she was a friend of the psychic, but I have felt her presence. And one time I was there, I heard her voice say, "I'm very pleased at the way they're keeping the grave." And so I said to the woman who was worked there, I said, "Well, Katharine Hepburn says she's very pleased at the way you're keeping her grave." And she says, "Yes, yeah." She had very specific instructions. She wanted kept very simple and very clean and very clear. We make sure it's kept that way. So I did make contact with him, but no psychic activity. It's kind of interesting. You know the way people set up their or arrange their monuments? It says a lot about them. Katharine Hepburn, for example, her mother died before the father, and the father married the mother's nurse. And I don't think Miss Hepburn was very happy about that, because when you look at the gravestones, Katharine and her brothers and sister are all together, and then the grave of the second Mrs. Hepburn is way off to the left, as if to say, she's not part of us. So it was very interesting.
Now, I know that some of the things also that I really like, excuse me, and that is EVPs. And you
EVPs
have,
are very exciting.
You have a good story with that, but I think what we'll do is we're going to be taking a break here in just a second, and we'll come back and talk about that. But
right, it's a very interesting story, because it involves not only spirit communication, but it involves my first EVP.
Well, good, because what we're also going to do is we're going to, as soon as I find out right here, we're also going to add Jeffrey on to us before we go take a break. So let me get him brought in here real quick, like. Oops. And we're going to add him right in here.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Jeffrey. How are you?
I'm doing good.
The gentleman that just moved?
Yes.
How's the weather in California?
It's actually quite nice. The evenings are getting a little brisk, but other than that, the days are rather toasty.
Ooh, I love that. I'm out in Connecticut, but we had 50 degrees today, so we're doing pretty good.
Awesome. Where in Connecticut?
I'm in Southfield, Connecticut. I'm about 5 miles from Bradley Airport.
Oh, okay, because my knowledge of Connecticut is sort of slightly limited. As ironic as it is, I normally went way up north into Kent.
Oh, yeah, Kent. Yeah, my son used to play hockey, and we used to play with a team up in Kent. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, we used to, I had a friend who had a property right near the Kent State Park Falls. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen those waterfalls?
I've been by them. I hear that they... they're a beautiful experience.
Oh, yeah, they're beautiful. Plus, of course, you've got really haunted Dudley Town and Dark Entry nearby there, too, which is always fun.
To tell you one of my Dudley Town stories later, I've got a spooky one.
All right.
Spooky place!
I think what we'll do is we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And, Craig, I'm going to let you take us out. How does that sound?
Well, I just got here.
That's all right.
But I'll take us out. Thank you, everybody, for listening tonight on The Paranormal View. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go away. The Paranormal View will be right back. Thank you.
everything they say, and no place that I'd rather be. Where else can you do a half a million things, all at a quarter to three? When they play their music, ooh, that modern music, they back it with a lot of style, but it's still that same old backbeat rhythm that really, really drives them wild. They say the hotter rock and roll is still beating, and from what I've seen, I believe them. Now the other may be barely breathing, but the hotter rock and roll is still beating. Sunset Strip is something everyone should see. Neon lights and the pretty, pretty girls all dressed so scantily. When they play their music, that hard rock music, they thank it with a lot of flash, but it's still that same old backbeat rhythm that really, really kicks them in the. They say the hard rock and roll is still beating, and from what I've seen, I believe them.
listening at home, at work, or anywhere. Thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View right here on the Para-X Radio Network. Want to thank everybody for being here tonight. And for those that are listening from around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you. And if you're not here with us tonight in the chat room, come on over. Para-X.com. Click on the show chat button on the right side of the page and click on the player button at the top of the page. You'll be in with all these wonderful people and you can interact with us and ask questions by private chatting either Jeffrey, Craig, or myself with questions for Elaine. And tonight we want to welcome back here Elaine Kuzmeskis. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
That's right. It's K-U-Z-M-E-S-K-U-S. And for people that want to get in touch with me, they can reach me on Facebook, Elaine Kuzmeskis, Spiritualist Medium. And I also have a website, and it has astrology predictions and a place where you can put in healing requests. I'm very big on healing. It's called the New England School of Metaphysics.com. And I'd be happy to send prayers out for anyone who needs them. And also, if you have questions, you can certainly email me there as well. And I'll answer as many as I can. I promise I'll do my best.
Well, we've already gone about 45 minutes, and I haven't even started coming close to the questions. But you was fixing to tell a story about EVPs. So why don't you tell that story first before we get started?
Well, I'd love to share that with your viewers. Well, when I did the research for Connecticut Ghosts, I went to many places, including Camp Chesterfield in Indiana. I was also at the Arthur Finley College in Stansted. And I went out to Omega in Rhinebeck, New York. And the way I got there is I contacted the Association for Transcommunication, which is run by Tom and Lisa Butler. And I asked them about their work on EVP, and Lisa emailed me back and gave me some information, and I read her book. And then I emailed her, and I said, well, if you are going to be in the area, I would love to meet you or take a seminar. And I guess it was the right time, because about a month later, she said, yes, we're going to be at Omega in upstate New York. So it was an interesting year. During that year, 2002, two people had died. One was the Reverend Carl Hewitt, who was a spiritualist medium in Connecticut, very well-recognized gentleman, much loved. And he'd often come and been a speaker in my classes at parapsychology. And the other person that was died was my husband's father, Anthony Kuzmeskis. When I went to Omega, I took the four-day class. There were only 12 people, and we had the most interesting people. We had a gentleman who had worked with Reed Brown, a famous medium down in Virginia, Roanoke, Virginia. We had a woman fly in from Haiti to take the class. So it was quite a good group. And what we did is we had to practice. So about the second night, I beat a medium, I tuned in, and I said my prayers, and I meditated, and I heard the voice of Carl Hewitt come through. He died in February, and it was now October. And Carl had a very distinctive accent. He was from North Carolina. And I heard his distinctive voice say, Elaine, you are close to a breakthrough. And he was so excited. And the next day, we were in groups of two, and I had my tape recorder. And you have to, there's a protocol. So I followed the protocol, and I asked, I turned the tape recorder on, and I asked, is anyone here? And then you have to wait about 20 or 30 seconds. And then you ask a second question, and wait again. And then you say, well, I'm going to close now. And you wait a few minutes, about 10 seconds, and you turn your tape recorder off. Well, when they put my tape up, you actually amplify the tape. Everyone in the room could hear a very distinct voice in a southern accent say, Carl, just like that. Sounded just like him. I didn't say a word. I let everybody comment, and people said, oh, that's Carl. And I said, does it sound like he has an accent? Oh, yeah, he sounds like he's from the south. So Carl Hewitt came through and brought that. Well, first EVP, and I was so happy that, first of all, to hear Carl's voice after he'd been in spirit for a number of months, and second, the touch that he made that great effort to help me with the EVPs. And then my second EVP was just as astounding. The next day we got our practice session, and this time when they amplified my tape, we heard a voice say, "Protect," and then it was kind of garbled, and then everybody heard very clearly the word Anthony, and that was my husband's father's name who had died that year. So I thought those were very evidential EVPs. Two names, one in a very distinctive accent, and the other with a message for. So I thought that was a very good beginning to my EVP research. And it does show that electronic voice phenomena is a valid way to communicate with the other side. Yeah. Have you done any EVPs yourself, Henry or Craig?
I've done a lot, actually.
You have? Have you had names come through?
Yes, even they've said my own name.
Great. Isn't that exciting?
It is. I've been working with another medium lately, which has been fantastic because she can see, she can have a conversation. She knows what's going on. And then my recorder's running, and I actually picked some of that conversation up, which is just amazing.
It is what comes in, definitely. And there are people who, even mothers who and fathers who have lost children, they have a group called the Big Circle. I met one of the ladies when I was at the EVP seminar. And what they do is once a week they meet and they meditate and they turn the tape recorder on and the voices of some of their children come through with messages, which is very healing for grief.
That is. I've helped families who have lost loved ones. And what I've got back on my recorder, the families will know right away what it is, even though I don't. And it, like you said, it's very, it helps them in the grieving process to know that they're still around.
They do. And, and usually when spirit brings messages through, it's something very personal so that the family member knows it really is their loved one.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is important.
Now, go ahead.
You know, electronic voice phenomena has really been around for a while. It's just recently that it's become so well known. It actually began in 1959 in Sweden. A man by the name of Fredrik Jurgensen had a reel-to-reel tape recording, went outside to record the cheerful chirpings of birds in his backyard. And when he played it back, he got names of people, and he also heard a male voice speak in Norwegian. And later, as he did the recordings, he heard people speak in several languages. And he put all this information in a book called Transmissions from the Deceased, which followed with Voices from the Universe. Isn't that wonderful?
Wow.
That's quite a while ago that it started.
That is, yeah.
But it wasn't until a man by the name of Professor or Dr. Konstein Radai, a researcher from Latvia, began to scientifically study it and validate it. And he did a great deal of work, and his book is called Breakthrough, and he talks about 72,000 voices that he recorded of the dead.
Wow.
So the research is there for anyone who's interested in reading it.
And all this didn't become big until ghost hunters started on TV and started bringing all this out and brought the paranormal to the forefront.
Well, Elaine,
right, I think the average person became much more aware of
right,
it.
Right, right.
Elaine, didn't Thomas Edison get some EVPs back then?
He did. And, you know, Thomas Edison, I've been to his home in Fort Myers, was quite an individual. He would work through the night in his laboratory. He has a cot because sometimes he would just sleep there and keep on working. And he got a lot of information in kind of a light trance state. He would kind of like sit very quietly. And the interesting about Edison is he always wanted to build a radio to the other side. That was one of the things he felt was possible. Wouldn't that be something if we ever did that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you could have hosts and guest hosts and not have to pay them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yes, you
do that on this side.
A lot of help. And they've done a lot of work with this in Brazil. A woman by the name of Sonia Rinaldi, she began to use EVP to help parents communicate with their children. And Lewis and Virginia, two medical doctors, lost their daughters Lucianne and Vivianne in a tragic automobile accident in November of 2001. And later, they made contact with the girls on the other side. Would you be interested in what they said?
Sure.
It's very touching. The father says, "How are you there in the spiritual plane?" And a young girl says, "It's proper peace." And then another young girl says, "I will call you up." And Lewis says, "Are you together?" And the young girl said, "You called us here, and I heard you." It's just very simple conversation from the two young daughters letting their father know that they pick up on his request.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Now that's... And in the United States, there's a woman by the name of Martha Coppola who wrote a book, I Am Still Here. And she communicated with her daughter, Catherine, who died in a car accident in December of 2001. And began giving EVPs, and she's the woman that started the Big Circle to help other parents who have lost children. Hmm. A lot of good has come out of this.
Well, I just love Sarah Estep, and in my book, she gets all my credit for getting EVP out there. She did a lot of work.
I've always wanted to meet her. Have you ever met Sarah?
No, I didn't. She passed away, correct?
I wish I had met her. She sounds like such a great person.
She does. She put a lot of time, a lot of patience into what she loved, and I give her a lot of credit.
And she was the type of person, she's just an average person interested in parapsychology, and she read about the raw dyed material and Frederick Jurgensen and decided to try it. She actually began reading... from a very famous channeler. She read Jane Roberts' books on Seth, the Seth channeling, and that inspired her to try her own research. One of the things that she did, she made a beautiful recording, and she asked the other side what it was like, and she got the one word, beauty, two, three words, rather, beauty I am. She also was able to make contact with the composer, Beethoven. And, of course, she was the founder of the American Association for EVP, which has since become the Association for Transcommunication. Very, very interesting lady. And, it just shows if you have a true, sincere desire to contact the other side, and spirit knows that, they'll help you. You'll get through.
Now, Jeff had a quick question. Was either one of you two typing?
No, I wasn't typing. Why?
Oh, here we go again.
Yeah, because we heard somebody typing on here.
Because I lifted my...
Yeah, we pick things up like that from time to time here on our show.
Why? One of my guides is a very fast typist. Might have come through. Was it fast typing?
Uh-oh.
Because he types about 70 words a minute. Well, if it's him, he's a fast typist. You know he's a wreck.
Yeah.
I type with one finger, so.
All right.
Yeah. He helps me when I do my writing.
I had a little message come up, said there was a
problem with the call.
Problem with the call, but everybody's still on, so it sounds like it's okay.
It was the universe saying, "Oh, they're telling too much secrets about some mysterious typing. We have to cut them off for a moment."
That's Skype does a lot of that. I wanted to get into a few of the places that you have in your book because you got a lot of good places in there. But we're only going to go with a few and then talk about some of the other things. And if we got time toward the end of the show. Maybe come back.
And I also will be happy to give you predictions, too.
We're going to try and make time for that also. One of the places you had in your book, though, you talked about is the Samuel Clemens House. And you did get to go there. Was there anything there?
Well, first of all, it's a beautiful home. It is built in the shape of a riverboat. because Samuel Clemens was the writer Mark Twain, and he spent a lot of time on riverboats. And so it's a beautiful historic home, and there's a lovely museum attached to it. They've actually built a great museum that tells you a lot about Mark Twain. So when I went there, I went to the museum, and I saw some of the people that had lived in the home. I saw his daughter Susie and the maid Mrs. Leary. I saw their pictures. And so we did that for about an hour, and then we went over to the Mark Twain house. I was there like several years before, so I was familiar with it. But this time was different. This time I was on a mission. I was here not to see the beautiful home and the furnishings and hear the stories. I was here to pick up spirits. So when I walked up the steps, I entered the entryway, which is a huge room with a round settee, and I looked at it, and I saw three women sitting there, three spirit women, dressed in Victorian dress. One was elegantly dressed, and she had this beautiful hat with a peacock feather in it, and that was Mrs. Clemens, Olivia Clemens, Mark Twain's wife, and next to her was her daughter, Susie, who had actually died in that home, and was a young girl in her early 20s. And then there was a woman with a very plain outfit on. Her hair was parted in the middle and was put in a bun. And that was their maid, Mrs. Leary. And the interesting thing is all three of those spirit ladies seemed to know why I was there. And they looked at me, and Mrs. Clemens looked at me, and she smiled as if to say, "You're welcome to come to our home." So clairvoyantly, their presence was very strong. But I did not pick up Mark Twain, but I did pick up his wife, his daughter Susie, and Mrs. Leary, the maid. And you can see, if people love their home, they would make up a very wonderful welcoming committee, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes.
And now, where was this at, Lane?
The Mark Twain home is in Hartford, Connecticut, on Forest Street, 77 Forest Street.
Okay, and I'm thinking of Elmira, New York.
No, he has one in Elmira, too. But
okay.
He lived with his family for many years in Hartford, because at one time, Hartford was a big hub for publishing.
Oh,
and
okay.
Mark Twain enjoyed it. He enjoyed his children. He married a little later in life. He was very playful with the children. They used to put on plays. They wore costumes. They did all kinds of wonderful things. He was a great father. And sadly, his daughter, Susie, came back to the home to attend a social event, and her family was in Europe, and she contracted meningitis and died shortly afterwards in her early 20s. So after that, they packed up, and they really didn't spend much time in Hartford. But before that, the home was a very, very happy place. Mark Twain, by the way, was a little bit psychic. He was. His daughter, Jean, was an epileptic, and she died by drowning in the bathtub. She had a fit and drowned. And every time he would go into the bathroom after she died, he would say, "I can feel Jean here, and I think she's with the others." So he, toward the end of his life, he did have some psychic experiences. He also, in his book, Notebooks, which I researched, which tells his personal tales being as a young man, he tells about a very unusual dream, and dreams are very important to me because, as I said earlier, I feel dreams are a very easy way to develop psychic communication. And Mark Twain, as a young man, worked on a riverboat. And this is the days before they were union. So if you were on the riverboat and you were supposed to be a hand and you didn't help out or you had a fight with the captain, he was off at the next port. So Mark Twain was there with his brother. And his brother's job was to shovel coal into the furnace, and he had another job. But Mark Twain got in a fight with the captain, and he was let off at the next port. And he had a very strong dream shortly thereafter. He saw his brother laid out in a coffin between two chairs. And next to him was a white pitcher with red flowers, and it really kind of shook him up. Well, about a week later, a tragedy occurred above on the ship, the riverboat, and the furnace blew up, killing several young men. And so what they did is they brought the bodies of the young men ashore, And the women of the town, seeing these beautiful faces and these young people, were deeply touched. They took up a collection. They bought caskets. But there were so many, they had no place to put them. So the local tavern put the caskets upstairs, and they put them between two chairs. So when Mark Twain was called to identify the body, he went to the tavern, went up to the second floor, and there was his brother laid out exactly as he had seen him in the dream, with one exception. There was no picture of flowers. And within a minute or two, one of the ladies came in with a white picture, red flowers.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that an incredible experience?
That is, yes.
Everything was exactly as he had seen it in the dream. And I think that always stayed with him. But he didn't necessarily like mediums. He used to make fun of them. He thought kind of silly. His neighbor, her name was Harriet Beecher Stowe, was very interested. She, of course, wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, and she had seances at her home. And she and her husband were very much involved with spirit communication. And this is because she, in those days, it was very common to lose children, and she had lost two children, and she loved communicating them with seances. And it's very interesting. The nook counter where they lived, there was another woman who was a spiritualist there as well. Isabella Beecher Hooker was her name. She came from a very famous family. The Beechers were very well known as religious people. And the Hooker family, Thomas Hooker, was one of the founding fathers of Hartford. And her husband was a lawyer. She lived in a very prestigious area and a very beautiful woman. And she believed very strongly in spirit communication. In fact, she was a great supporter of the spiritualist that ran for president. Do you know who the first woman to run for president was?
No.
She was a spiritualist. And one of the things that she was known for was her ability to communicate with the other side, which is very, very interesting. So we had many people in Hartford that were very much interested in the spirit world. And Harriet Beecher Stowe and Isabella Beecher Hooker were probably two of the most famous of all. And visiting Nook Corner, you really do get the sense while you're there of a very beautiful community where people seem to appreciate each other and get along very, very well, which is nice. The other place that I like very much, which is just outside of Hartford, is the home of Theodate Pope. It's called Hillstead Museum now because it's a museum. And she was another famous Connecticut resident, and she believed very strongly in spirit communication. But you know, you don't read about these people in the history book, do we?
No.
No.
At least not that aspect of them.
Oh, we don't. Because you have to really go a little bit deeper. And when I did research, I found that Theodate Pope's energy was very much present there as well. And I told you the story about using the EMF meter. It's also interesting that some of the spirits are still around. There's a place called the Pettibone Tavern, which is in Simsbury, Connecticut. And people feel the spirit of Abigail there, especially in the bathrooms. Also the waitstaff feel Abigail around. And so I went there to investigate, and I felt a lot of haunted energy in that location as well. So I like to go to places that have the original homes, because I think that's very important.
And up in that area, there are some that dates way back to the early 1700s.
Right, definitely. Yeah. Another one that I think Ghost Hunters did, and you may be aware of it, was the Ledge Lighthouse in New London.
Right.
That is haunted. Now, I didn't research that. Susan Roberts did that for me. That's the only one I didn't go personally. But I really do feel that is haunted, and it has a ghost by the name of Ernie. And many people feel Ernie there. Yeah. So that's a great place to go as well. Another place that I like very much is the Eugene O'Neill Hall in Monte Cristo in New London. Have you ever been there? That's kind of well known for ghosts.
No.
Yeah. I didn't feel O'Neill there, but I did feel his mother's presence. And she, of course, lived there for many years. I did feel her energy very strongly there. And the only place I got any psychic pictures, they let me take different pictures of different rooms, was when I went to the second floor, to the room that is opposite Eugene O'Neill's childhood bedroom. And in that room, it's kind of a storage room. It has a lot of his original manuscripts. And when I took pictures, I got ectoplasm there. I think some of the energy, his energy was more present with the manuscripts being there. So that was another interest. I've learned so much when I do these investigations. Just one thing seems to lead to the next. You know that? Yeah. You were interested in the Thomas Benton House. I think Henry asked me about that.
Yes, that was on the list.
Yeah, that is in Holland, Connecticut. And it has kind of an interesting history to it, because the property was originally purchased by Nathaniel and Rebecca Goldstein in the 1600s. And it was in the 1600s, just as in Plymouth, Massachusetts, Connecticut had its share of people that were accused of being witches. And in the case of the Greensmiths, one of their neighbors, Ann Cole was her name, became ill. She probably had the flu, but she said that she was being possessed in a diabolical way by the Greensmiths. And in those days, if you said somebody was a witch, it was taken very seriously. So they were put to the test. Do you know what the test was to see if you were a witch or not?
Well, I think they put you in water, and if you ducked you under, if you drowned, you was a witch. If you drowned, you wasn't a witch. If you lived, you was, or something like that.
I think in Connecticut.
Let me tell you, see, you guys could have passed it. They tied their right thumb to their left toe, and their left thumb to their right toe, and then they were thrown in the water. If somehow they managed to stay afloat, they were a witch. If they drowned, they were innocent. What a test!
Yes, you didn't win no matter which way. Yeah,
sounded more like they were dared to dance the Charleston in that position. But
I know. So the Greensmiths made a pact. There was evidence that the Greensmiths had made a pact with the devil. But before this test came, Rebecca broke down and confessed, so she was hung. And her husband drowned. But, you know, there's more to this story. It doesn't end here, this sad tale. In a very strange twist, Ann Cole, who accused them of witchcraft, later benefited from their death because she married Andrew Benton, a widower, who had bought the property left by the Greensmiths. So you can
see just happened to become available.
Jealousy, greed, negativity, fear, were very present in that story. And certainly the Greensmiths were given no real opportunity to prove they were not witches. But you know what? There's something called karma, which means what you do to someone else comes back to you. So the Benton home was not a healthy one. And later, several relatives died of smallpox there. And so visitors to the Benton home now feel that one of the women that died of smallpox, her name was Jemima, who died during the Civil War era, had a very lonely period, and her spirit is often seen dressed in the fashion of the 1800s in the Benton homestead. Now, when I went there, it was actually closed, but I did take pictures around. I got orbs, and I felt there was a lot of psychic energy in the basement. I would have loved to get in and took some pictures in the basement. I felt there was a great deal of energy there. And I also felt a male presence near the house, and I was able to get a picture of an orb just above my husband's shoulder, which you can actually see in the book, Connecticut Ghosts, the picture of the Benton homestead. Well, it's a very interesting tale what went on in Connecticut in the 1600s. The very first person to be hung as a witch was in Windsor, Connecticut. She was a woman by the name of Alice Young, married to one of the town clerks, and that's all we know about her. I feel she probably was just one of these poor souls that had a mole on her body or didn't get along with her neighbor and was falsely accused, and because she didn't have the proper representation, was taken to Trinity Hill and hung. So, in a way, I like to tell these stories because it's part of history, history that you don't hear about in the history books. And it's exciting to do psychic investigation because many times the spirits wait for us and they try to help us as we're doing these investigations. Now, did we talk about Dudleytown at all?
No.
Just when I came on and right. I mentioned being in that area.
Right. Dudleytown is the most haunted town in the United States.
It wouldn't let me go there. Dudleytown wouldn't let me go there.
It is something, I'm telling you. A lot of strange and twisted energy there.
My friend who had the property, there was a road that ends right at the falls. There's a there's a bridge over the falls, and
right.
They could not maintain the road. It was like nature constantly took it back, and we went hiking up to where a woman had been murdered, and we're checking that out. And I was looking down the trail, and then I came back. To this dilapidated house, and then the next time we looked down the trail towards Dark Entry, it was almost like a horror movie. All the trees had like almost moved in, like you don't want to go this way.
Right, it's got a very nasty presence. The bark is stripped out off the trees for no reason. It's like a very still energy. There's no animals, which is unusual in the forest. And the people of Litchfield don't like visitors. They're not very friendly. In fact, if you try to find Dudleytown Road, they often change the name. When I did the research in 2002, it was called Bear Mountain Road. And when we went there, we asked people, because we had gotten a map where Dudleytown Road was, and it took us almost 2 hours to find it. People in the town kept giving us wrong directions. And finally said, "You'll never find Dudleytown Road. It's Bear Mountain Road."
Wow.
So after a very irritating start, my husband Ron and I, we drove up, and the first thing you notice are these big signs posted by the town, and the signs say, "Parked cars will be towed per order of the selectmen, and those who trespass illegally can be fined $75 per person." So one of us had to stay in the car at all times, so we didn't get towed. And you only had 15-minute parking, so you had to keep moving the car every 15 minutes. So they don't really want you there. The people don't. But I was determined, and we did take pictures. And once we got there, the first thing I noticed when we turned down Bear Mountain Road, my stomach got really sick. I felt like I was very nauseous, like there was a negative energy pulling me. And when we got there and we unloaded the camera and took pictures, my husband said, "I'm going to go further into the woods." So he went into the woods, and he was the one that found it to be a dead zone. No animals, barks on the tree. And it seemed like the camera didn't really work properly either. It seemed like there was just a terrible feeling around us. And the funny thing is, they say a lot of couples quarrel, and we started having a quarrel over something silly. And it wasn't until we left that I began to feel more settled. And as we left Dudleytown, we went along the Connecticut River, and I began to feel a little calmer. And I felt there was a great many American Indians in Litchfield County along the river. Now, I did a lot of people report things like if you go to Dudleytown, people start fighting. On the internet, a woman by the name of Celeste said there was a man and woman camped out there overnight because it abuts the state forest. And she began to become delusional and accused her husband of cheating on her. And the next thing you know, they wife filed for divorce. There's all kinds of these kind of Dudley Town stories of people not getting along.
Well, now, how big a town is that? I mean, is it a lot of people or just a small place?
Small town.
Yeah.
And it's known for its fly fishing.
Oh, really?
A lot of it really is a beautiful area, Litchfield County. And it has, of course, a lot of fishermen like to do fly fishing if you see a lot of people out fishing.
Well, we're going...
place. Now, the original people that settled the town came from England, the Dudley brothers. And they feel that they might have put a curse out on royalty. And because of that, the royals in England might have put a curse on the brothers when they came over here. But there's also another reason that people say that Dudley Town may be so cursed, and that is some people feel that the Dudley brothers inadvertently built their town over an American Indian ground, which, of course, the American Indians wouldn't like that very much.
Oh, no.
Well, also, it's been theorized that they ate moldy bread that became ergot, and essentially they went insane.
Well, that's another one, too. I've heard that also. Yeah.
Now, when I was there, as I say, looking through dark entry down the path was one year, but another year we went up there, and I was up with a sensitive friend, and it was winter, but it hadn't really been snowing all that much. And so I said, well, you know, nearby is Dudley Town. We really need to find this. So, and I have this list written on my website, this experience. And I said, okay, I know it's in this direction. We were kind of like going by without even knowing exactly where it was, but we knew that it was right around very close to where my friend's property was. And we were driving down, and I made a turn to the left, with the state park to the right, and she says, no, it's down that road. So
right,
I stopped, turned around, and we went down the other street, and this is a main street. It wasn't like an off-the-road trail or anything. But as we were driving, we came around a curve, and there was this blizzard all by itself. It was like passing through a curtain of snow into this blizzard that wasn't sticking to the asphalt. And as we got closer and closer, she began developing cramps and pain and psychic attacks.
I felt very sick. I have to say that, yes.
Yeah, she says, we have to turn around. It does not want us there. So we turned around. We went back to the same place where the curtain of snow ended, and it was clear as a bell. And I'm like, all right, that was just really weird. The last day as we were leaving, I said, well, let's give Dudley Town one more try because now, obviously, that snow has passed. It was still there. As though it was just this little section of snowstorm waiting to stop people from going any further. And she got hit again with the attacks. And so I have not yet been officially to Dudley Town.
Wow.
Right. You know, there is something to this idea that there is negative energy. Because, you know, we have good and bad.
Yeah, we have ESPN and CNN talking about Congress all the time. Oh, wait, that's something else.
You know, we have good and bad people in our own everyday life, people that are supportive of us and people that are jealous. And there are spirits that are very disturbed, and they do. They draw from your solar plexus, and you feel it. You feel like you're under psychic attack.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So Dublin is one place I would suggest going with a friend, because you're going to have someone sit in the car so your car doesn't get...
Oh.
And not to stay too long.
Well, we're going to...
Get a getaway driver.
I would definitely not sleep overnight in the state park. Definitely don't.
Oh.
Now, as beautiful as it is, don't go someplace else.
Well, oddly enough, in that same area, we have Sasquatch and UFO activity.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Now you give her something else to check out.
Yep.
Yeah, so many interesting things, aren't there?
Yeah.
You know, graveyards are great places to get psychic pictures. Doug wanted to visit a graveyard and got orb pictures.
Cool.
Yeah. Lorraine and Ed Warren.
Oh, yes.
Very famous ghost investigators in Connecticut.
Well, Lorraine's still with us, at least.
Lorraine is with us, and Ed is in the spirit world. Hi, Ed. I hope you're around.
Yay.
And Lorraine, they're delightful people. They are very spiritual, and they do not believe in using any Ouija boards or any artificial means to connect spirits. They They feel that you should bring a religious article, such as a cross or crucifix with you, or a religious picture, and protect yourself against negative spirits. I feel that they also give a lot of very good ideas on places to visit in Connecticut. And one of the places that they talk about when I did my research was Our Lady of the Rosary Cemetery in Monroe, Connecticut. And I visited that cemetery, and we got about 40 different orb pictures from three different cameras. Myself and two other people went, and it's filled with orb energy. I don't think it's always the spirits of the people that were buried there. I think there are protective spirits around the cemetery, you know, American Indians. And the one spirit that Ed and Lorraine document is they saw the spirit of the lady in white, who's supposed to be a spirit presence at the cemetery in Monroe. It was interesting.
Now, I haven't actually gotten any orb photos. I've taken photos in cemeteries, but I haven't managed to get any orbs yet. And you had indicated earlier about EVPs. I've only gotten one EVP so far, and that was on the Queen Mary. So
wonderful.
But I did try at Hollywood Cemetery.
Oh, nice. Sometimes you have to ask the spirit's permission. Meditate, ask the spirit's permission, talk to the spirits, interact. Those are all things that can help you with your EVPs and your orb pictures as well. Can be very, very helpful. I think that there are so many wonderful adventures for people that want to study the paranormal. There really are. And I think starting with psychic photography and electronic voice phenomena can be a very good way to begin. Definitely.
Now, I think since our time is kind of running right on by, I want to take another quick little break here. And then when we come back, I'll let you talk about some predictions.
And I'll be glad to.
Then if we got some time, I want to talk about a little bit about astrology and some things about seances and stuff. So, Jeff, why don't you take us out for a quick little break, kind of.
Well, you're all listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com this new year, 2012. We'll be right back, so stick around, sing along, feel free to dance, as there'll certainly be stick figures dancing in the chat room, I'm sure.
Lying beside you, here in the dark, feeling your heart with mine. Softly you whisper, you're so sincere, how could I let be so blind? We sailed on together,
what your love means to me. Open arms.
X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para X Show Host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para X Show Host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant. You always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X Show
Host. Para-X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View right here on the Para-X Radio Network. Now, I do want to thank those that are listening from around the world tonight. Tonight we have listeners from the U.S., U.K., Australia, and the one famous other place. So thank you for listening tonight, and thank those for being here in the chat room and being with us tonight also.
Probably Ghost of Dudley Town listening.
Probably. Tonight we have Elaine Kuzmeskis with us, and I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight. I wanted to ask you, before Jeff and Craig came on earlier, when we first started the show, were you writing something down or drawing or doing something with a pencil?
Yes, I was. I was writing my predictions and getting things organized.
Oh, okay. Because I know that I heard somebody doing something with a pencil. So at least that one, we know what was. That
yeah.
wasn't a spirit. But since you was writing some down, why don't you share that with us?
Yes, well, of course, today is Saturday, January 7th, 2012, and I have 10 predictions that I feel will be coming to fruition within the next year to year and a half, and my accuracy is about 85%, so no one can be perfect, only God is perfect. But the first one is I've been tuning into the Occupy movement, and I feel it's going to really take off early this spring. I think it's going to spread. I would also say watch it to spread in many major cities, and there may be riots in Miami, Philadelphia, New York, and also spreading overseas to London. So, and this is all based on the economy, people being very unhappy on the fact that there aren't jobs and the support that people need. The third prediction, I feel, I'm an astrologer, so watch February. I feel the euro is going to drop, and it may go down to below $1.25 U.S. By the end of May, so it's going to drop. The next prediction is a happy one. I predict a baby for the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge this year. I think it's going to be toward the end of the year and a very, very happy occasion. I feel that Greece has temporarily gotten the help it needs from other European countries, but it's very likely to default on its loans this year. The next one is like one I feel is not as strong, but I feel very psychically. I've been feeling this for a couple of years. I feel the terrorists are very much focused on one city in the United States, New York City. And I feel they would very much like to target the Statue of Liberty, especially in the June, July summer months. So I feel there may be some disturbances there, or this may come to light. But I feel, thank goodness for Homeland Security, they have kept our shores very safe the last few years. So we all need to pray for New York. I do feel that President Obama has a 60 to 70% chance of getting in, but I think it's going to be a very close election, and I feel that Mitt Romney will be the Republican candidate. Very close, almost a dead heat. You know, it's going to be very close. But not 100%. I said, you know, 60 to 70% chance.
Well, yeah, I mean, we listen to him saying, well, I need more time to finish what I started. We look at what he's done so far, like, please, let's not do that. You know, please.
But I'll give you two reasons why I think. One, I feel very strongly that the economy is going to pick up a little bit in the spring, April, May, and June. I do. The job reports will be better. There'll be more people working because of federal money being put into projects. And the second thing, the troops are coming home, and people just love that. So that's going to give him a boost. You know how when he visited Germany, when he first came into power, how everyone was so excited? There's going to be more of that fanfare late spring. So that's going to boost his ratings. So those are the two things that will help him. I feel, and this is happy news, that eventually the economy will improve. And I think it's going to start to show improvement with a little bubble in May and also in the fall before the elections. And the first industry I see improving is the car industry. I think they're going to start getting things on track. And the last industry I see improving is the home industry. I feel the housing industry might take up to 2015 to 2018, depending on where you're living, to actually get back to where it was in 2007. I also feel that there are going to be big advances in medicine. And one of the first that's going to come out within the next year is going to be better treatment and also prevention for diabetes. And I feel this is something we all should be happy about. By 2015 to 18, science will prove there's an afterlife. And it's going to be something where they're going to have documented evidence from near-death experiences. Will prove to many people that there is a consciousness beyond the present. So I think that will be very good. And my last prediction, you'll be happy to note, I'm also an astrologer and I've studied the Mayan calendar, is the world will not end on December 21st, 2012. We'll all be here, God willing. But it is the end of our present global system. In particular, many elements are beginning to break down, and we're going to have a new consciousness coming in. And I also feel that there could be more problems with the Mideast by the end of 2012, especially with Israel. And that is kind of an indicator of the end of an era. So that's what I see. I know a lot of other people make similar predictions, but that's how I see the year ahead. I think the most exciting thing is we are going to go into a more spiritual period after 2012. That's going into 2013, 14, 15, where there's going to be more emphasis on community, on families, on being involved with the world in a way that we treat the whole world with respect. And I think the environmental movement is doing a lot in that direction.
So, do you see an end in all these paranormal TV shows? Please tell me yes.
You just want one in particular to go away?
Well, I think people are going to be more discriminating. I do. And I feel that, you know, how psychic photography has become so much in the news and on these shows. I think that's going to continue to be a very hot topic. And I also feel physical mediumship is coming back. People that have the ability to create things such as table tipping, psychic pictures, and things of that nature are going to be in the news very much in the next few years. Oh, another thing I forgot, the play Houdini with that's going to be on Broadway with Hugh Jackman. I think it's going to be a big success.
Well, it's got Hugh Jackman in it, so come on.
I don't wonder, huh? But I think there's going to be a revival of the 1920s, you know, both in fashion and a lot of the things from the 20s are going to become popular again. So that'll be interesting. You know, I did the official, I was the medium for the official Houdini seance they held in Connecticut at the Goodspeed Opera House in 1997.
I thought the official Houdini seances were in California.
Well, they are different places, but the Houdini Society in 1997, they did the official seance at the Goodspeed Opera House because the play Metamorphosis was being produced. And they thought it would be
Sorry.
We had a seance right at on midnight on Halloween. And Sydney Radar, who runs the museum, people that had written about Houdini, who were involved in his life in one way or another, came to East Haddam, Connecticut. And there were 12 of us, and I was the medium. And I sat at the table at midnight. And everybody held hands, and we concentrated on the spirit of Harry Houdini.
Well, did he come through?
I feel he came through briefly. When I went around the table and I gave messages to people, and I came to the man that played Houdini in Metamorphosis, and I said, "You knew Houdini has been around you. He was there a couple of weeks ago when you injured your left shoulder and you weren't sure if you were going to go on. And Houdini encouraged you to go on anyway." And I said, "You know, you don't know that much about magic, but Houdini's telling me he's helping you with the magic trick in the play." And he acknowledged both things were true, and nobody in the cast or no one on stage knew that information. So where else did I get it? I'm the telephone operator. Harry Houdini did come through. But the Houdini Society have a very, very strict test. They place a pair of Houdini's handcuffs in the middle of the table, and they lock them. And the only way they will acknowledge that Houdini is present if his spirit comes through and unlocks the handcuffs. And I can tell you as a medium, that has never been done. But it was an interesting experience, and it got me thinking a lot about spirit communication how important it is to be as accurate as you can in your messages. It was an interesting experience. My friend Celia Luanchuk has done the Houdini seances a couple of times and has felt Houdini's spirit come through. So I hope he comes through for Hugh Jackman. I hope he makes the play a big success, because I think he was an exciting person and very charismatic. And he was also a bit psychic, though he never really totally believed in it. Yeah.
Now, one of the questions that I wanted to talk about is table tipping.
Yes, I've done a lot of it. I teach a class in table tipping.
Now, exactly what does a table do when you're trying to do table tipping?
Well, first of all, you need to have people that are like-minded and that are believers. And I usually get three or four people, and I use a round table, and we all put our fingers lightly on it. Now, when spirit starts to come through, the table is going to tip or start to shake. So in order to find out if you are communicating with a spirit, you have to set up a code. So usually I'll say, if you go to the left, it's a yes. If you go to the right, it's a no. And that way you can ask questions. So usually I try to identify the spirit. And one time we did table tipping, the table started to move a little bit. And so I said to the table, "Do you want to go into the dining room, which is the room in next?" And we had established a yes or no code, and it dipped to the left, which was no. Then I said, "Well, do you want to go in the kitchen?" Dipped again to the left, no. So then I thought, "Well, do you want to go to my office?" And it dipped to the right. So we just gently put our hands on the table, And it actually began to walk out of the living room, which is about an 18-foot living room, around the corner. By that time, I only had a couple of fingers on it, and marched 12 feet down the hallway into my office. So the table really can move quite a bit. And I've also seen the table levitate, which is more advanced. Usually in the beginning, if you can just get it to move and establish a code, that's a good way to begin. It isn't going to happen. It usually took us like 3 sessions before we really got a good energy established.
Well, now,
after that, we always had our table tipping in my office because the table liked it better there than any place else.
Well, now, do you have to say a certain type of ritual or do something to actually make it work?
Well, no, the spirit makes it work. You're just the telephone operator or the communicator.
Right.
I always say the Lord's Prayer because I'm a Christian, but whatever religious prayer you'd like to say, or you can say affirmation. We dedicate this table to the highest and best, and we ask that those spirits who would like to communicate to come through. You can, something very simple. But it takes time. The old-time spiritualists, they didn't have TV, they didn't have radio, they didn't have the computer, and they could sit for an hour or two every night if they wanted to.
Right.
You have to take time to get it going. And spiritualism actually began with physical communication, with the rappings that were heard by the Fox sisters. So physical mediumship was really how spiritualism began. And they would establish a code. They would hear raps in the wall. And these little girls who were playing in the basement established a code, like for yes and no. Like one rap would be yes, two would be no, three would be maybe or whatever. And they began to communicate with the spirit of a dead peddler. And it wasn't long before they were the talk of Hydesville, New York. And they later became stage mediums and became quite famous.
Now, I've seen it one time, and there was quite a few of us there when it was taking place. I wasn't one of the ones sitting at the table, but
right.
They had it moving all around the floor.
Move, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're pushing it or anything, because when that table rounded the corner, I could barely keep my fingers on it.
Right.
Yeah. But it takes time, takes patience. If you want to start table tipping, I would suggest using a small wooden table that has like 3 legs. Those are the best to start with. And, maybe sit for 15 minutes every night for a while with the same group of people, or once a week, whatever your schedule is. And it takes patience, but eventually you will begin to feel a vibration in your fingers. And sometimes it feels like energy is being drawn from your fingers. It feels like your fingers are almost like taffy, getting sticky. And once it starts moving, stay calm and ask the table to give you a yes and wait, and then ask for a no and begin to investigate who the spirit is present. Sometimes you can get it to actually tap. Sometimes it'll tap. I use an alphabet then.
Right.
Like one is an A, 2 taps is a B.
Now, many years ago, my grandma and mom and all of them used to live in Kentucky. And one of the things that would take place down there many years ago was they had traveling salesmen that would go from town to town. And most of them, or a lot of them, would be out walking or something like that from the towns. And it would come to get dark, and they would stop at different houses to see if they could put them up for the night. Some of the things that the salesman would do to pay to be able to do that would be they would raise the table, is what they called it.
Yeah.
My grandma had seen them do it one time. She must have been about 15.
Right.
They was talking about doing it, and they had her sit on the table, and the guy said, "Table, I want you to rise up and tap one time for every year old this girl is," and it tapped 15 times.
Wow.
And then it said, "Table, I want you to rise up and tap one time for every year it is until she gets married, and it tapped one time. Wow. And before her 17th birthday, she was married.
I think that shows that there is an intelligence behind that movement, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, people think it's silly. They think it's like a stage. But when you have real table tipping, it actually moves pretty much almost on its own.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And even when people get excited, the spirit just keeps on going. In fact, I'm doing a seminar at Lilydale Assembly in New York City in August. I'll be doing a seminar on dreams and astral travel and one on physical mediumship, which is based on my new book coming out this spring, The Art of Mediumship.
Well, so, now, if you've been going to Lilydale, you probably know Tim Shaw, Reverend Tim Shaw.
I've probably met him. There's so many wonderful mediums there. We're really blessed. It's a beautiful place in upstate New York. It's not too far from Niagara Falls.
Right, because he lives in Buffalo, so he goes there quite often, I guess.
Great place it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, our time is just kind of like zipped right on by tonight. I want to make sure that we thank you for being on with us. And we want you to stay on till after we get off, and we'll talk with you for a little bit.
Okay.
But have you guys got any other quick questions that you want to ask? Jeff?
Not at the moment. No, we were, let's see, I'm unmuted. But I certainly look forward to checking out your books, Arlene. That's going to be cool.
Oh, thank you. And I hope people will visit me on Facebook. It's Elaine Kuzmeskus, Kuzmeskus, Spiritualist Medium. And I'd be happy to see any of your comments. It's been a pleasure being on your show.
Well, I've already sent you an ad request, by the way.
Oh, cool. Yeah, thank you.
I did, too, like a week ago. And
Good.
Anyway,
now you also you have another site, your metaphysical site also.
Yes, it's the New England School of Metaphysics.com, and I have a lot of good information. Every month I post predictions for the new and full moon, so that's kind of interesting. And we have a place where people can request healings and prayers. We certainly are happy to do that as a gift to the community. And all the classes, we teach a structured program called the Basics of Mediumship, which is a 24-week program on developing the gift of mediumship. Several of our graduates are already practicing mediums. It's exciting to see people grow and develop.
Now, is your new book coming out in, was it March or May?
Probably in the spring is what Schiffer says, and you can pre-order it if you wish at schifferpublications.com. And it's a book called The Art of Mediumship. It takes the person from developing clairvoyance and clairaudience and clairsentience into development of electronic mediumship, working with EVPs and psychic photography. And we even go into trance mediumship and medical clairvoyance. And I interviewed some wonderful people. I have a chapter on psychic detectives. I interviewed Noreen Rainier, who's one of our best psychic detectives. She was a sweetheart. She gave me a very long interview. And I also talk about the work of Edgar Casey and Andrew Jackson Davis and their medical clairvoyance. So it has quite a lot of material, and it's an excellent book for people who really want to develop their spiritual gifts, which I feel everyone has to a certain degree.
So maybe sometime after that book comes out, later on in the year, maybe we can get you to come back on, because there's a lot of stuff that we didn't really quite touch on.
It's fun to talk with you. It's enjoyable.
Well, we thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight. And Jeff, why don't you give out all of our sites where people can go to listen to our shows and read about the write-ups on them, and if they want to get some purchase some souvenirs, you might say.
There you go. I'm lucky to have my computer up. Well, yeah, we're my website Paranormal View page is jeffgould.net, jeffgould.net/2011pnv.htm. You can also search for Paranormal View on Facebook. We're very open there, and we've started posting interesting things of the paranormal, not just promoting our show, but interesting things that come our way we'll put up there. And if you wish to purchase official Paranormal View attire or such like that, you can go to the cafepress.com. Trying to remember because I don't have it immediately in my head.
Well, you have a link for it on your site, though.
Yeah, the link is on every report page that I do, but I would help if I said it correctly. At cafepress.com/realbadgershop, all one word, REALBADGER shop. And so you can get all of your Paranormal View attire needs there. And of course, we're here every Saturday from 8 till 10 Eastern Time and 5 till 7 on the Pacific Coast where I am. So,
hooray. Now, you can also go to theparanormalview.com, and
yes,
we put links up for the shows there. Links are up there for Jeff's web pages. And you can also go to the main menu here in the chat room. You see Saturday shows. You can go there to the Paranormal View, and you can go to the on-demand button there and listen to all our past shows. So I've been kind of sick since a little after Christmas, and I think my voice is trying to wane away, you might say. So I think I want to thank everybody before it does go for being with us tonight, for listening to the show. And Elaine, thank you again. And Craig and Jeff, glad you guys did make it. So appreciate it.
A little late,
that.
But yes.
Oh, Craig was late too?
Yes.
Jeff, I was out. I thought I lived in the boonies. I turned on my GPS trying to get home, and literally it's the first time my GPS said, "Sorry, dude, I don't know where the hell you're at. I can't help you out."
It literally couldn't get a signal?
No, for 5 minutes.
Blimey.
Next week, I want to remind everybody, we'll have Doug and Pat of the Ghost Soldiers on here. No telling what they'll be talking about. But I'm sure it's all going to be good. They're great filmmakers, great storytellers. And if you didn't go to Parax Vision and watch their show on Monday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern, then you've probably missed seeing me in one of their movies.
Aww.
So
I was watching one of the streaming videos they had, and there was like a quick photo of you at a computer or something, and I'm like, oh, there's Henry.
Oh, yeah. So, till next week, this is Henry Foister.
Craig Rupp.
Jeffrey Gould.
And we'll see you next Saturday at 8 o'clock. Till then.
Visit us again if you dare. You've been listening to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
The Paranormal View.